Hi, this is Janice Torres from Yo Quiero Dinero. From a local business to a global corporation, partnering with Bank of America gives your operation access to exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful, you'll make every move matter. Visit bankofamerica.com/bankingforbusiness to learn more. What would you like the power to do? Bank of America N.A. Copyright 2024.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Patrick Petrini has supported Independent Tech News directly for 5 years. Be like Patrick. Become a DTNS member at patreon.com/DTNS. This is the Daily Tech News for Tuesday, January 22nd, 2019 in Los Angeles. I'm Tom Merritt.
And from Studio Feline, I'm Sarah Lane.
From Oakland, California, I'm Justin Robert Young.
And from the fringes of LA County, I'm the show's producer, Roger Chang.
And of course, Justin Robert Young on a Tuesday instead of a Thursday, because he has a top five comedy album out today with our other guest on today's show, Mr. Brian Brushwood, host of Night Attack and Long Road.
We've got some facts over here. First of all, it's a number one comedy album. It was a top five all albums on iTunes for temporarily number three. But the point is, yes, we finally both made it. It was a big thing when we had this album coming out. It was like, hey, Justin, you know what's a thing we've never done before? Is shown up like as a duo. Like either one or the other of us goes on things. Finally, we're doing it together.
Yeah. And I'm super proud of the album. I think it's great. All's Well, a Night Attack album available now. We'll talk a little bit more about it.
But, yeah, we're going to talk to these guys a little bit about the things they had to go through to get an independent album out on the internet. They've been doing this more than once. This isn't their first time through. So we'll learn from them in a bit. Let's start with a few tech things you should know.
Sources tell the Wall Street Journal that Apple may drop LCDs altogether from the iPhone line next year in favor of OLED screens and will also reportedly be launching a 5G iPhone in 2020. However, the company is still expected to release an LCD screen successor to the XR later this year.
The Wall Street Journal sources say Foxconn is considering moving the iPhone's manufacturing to India. Foxconn Terry Gu supposedly plans to visit India to research the idea. Apple already produces its iPhone SE in India in order to help it navigate laws requiring retail stores to stock a percentage of goods manufactured inside the country. Foxconn supposedly wants to make sure it can find enough skilled workers and the appropriate infrastructure.
And then it might be good to just move it to India anyway. That's the growth market. China's sort of topping out. Microsoft introduced a range of Windows 10 devices for the education market, including 2-in-1s and laptops from Acer, Dell, and Lenovo, all around $300. Lenovo actually announced its 100E, now available for $189, so these are some cheap laptops. Microsoft also introduced the Microsoft Classroom Pen with a hardened tip and replacement tip and a slot for tethering to devices for classrooms that are kind of hard on this stuff. It'll ship with the Surface Go in all markets in February and also sell in packs of 20 to schools for about $40 per pen. Microsoft also announced it's giving CodeJumper, its project to teach programming to visually impaired students, to the American Printing House for the Blind to implement.
The Michigan Economic Development Corporation approved an $8 million grant for Waymo and Magna to build a manufacturing facility for autonomous cars. The goal is to move into a facility somewhere in southeast Michigan by mid-year and prepare to make level 4 vehicles. Waymo has supplier partnerships with both Fiat Chrysler and Jaguar Land Rover.
And right before the show, the U.S. Department of Justice affirmed it will seek extradition of Huawei's chief financial officer, Meng Wanzhou. She is accused of misrepresenting links to a firm that tried to sell equipment to Iran in violation of U.S. sanctions. U.S. has until January 30th to file a formal request for extradition. And after that's done, Canada has 30 days to determine if there is enough evidence to justify the extradition. All right, let's talk a little bit more about Netflix. Yeah, we know Roma got 10 nominations for Oscars, but that's not what we're going to talk about, is it, Justin?
No, Politico reports Netflix is in advanced talks to join the Motion Picture Association of America. The MPAA is currently made up of Disney, Paramount, Sony Universal, Warner Brothers, and Fox, although Fox will leave when Disney finishes its deal to acquire it. According to Politico, bringing companies like Netflix into the fold has been a goal of the MPAA CEO, Charles Rivkin, who took over the association in September of 2017.
So yeah. I know it's a goal of the MPAA, but what does it do for Netflix?
Oh, it gets them into the power structure. I mean, Netflix has been on the outside looking in because of all of these movie studios' relationships with movie theaters. That is the thing that stops every element of Netflix getting rewarded for motion picture awards and stuff like that. So the more that they are a part of the workaday element of this process, the more that they are better off in terms of rewarding talent and producers with what they want.
I suppose so. At the same time, I wonder how much Netflix itself, which obviously makes a lot of money and has only grown year over year, cares about the old guard. I understand the directors and producers, sure, because we're still working within a system. But yeah, I don't know. I could be wrong.
The MPAA existing studios want to keep Netflix from tearing up the ground with the theaters. They want to put pressure on the theaters too, though. So yes, you're right. It's definitely to the advantage of these studios. Netflix is withdrawing itself from the Internet Association and entering this because they want to be seen as an entertainment company. They want to be seen as a studio, and they want to come to the theaters not as a startup, an outsider. They want to come to the theaters saying, hey, we've got five other friends with us. You need to agree to a smaller window for our movies in theaters. Remember, Roma was one of the first movies where Netflix said, fine, we'll give you a small window of exclusivity in theaters. We're just not going to agree to 90 days. So they've showed that they're willing to compromise now. And I think they want that extra leverage of, you know, we got some friends with us too.
This is also a good time to remember that the MPAA exists because it was a preemptive strike on government intervention about who could see what kind of movie and what kind of situation. The idea was, let's self-police before the government has the opportunity to come in and tell us what kind of movies, what kind of stories we can and can't tell. So in that regard, if they were to exclude Netflix, Netflix's only move would be to maybe spend a few money on some lobbying dollars and make a lot of trouble for the MPAA.
Yeah. By the way, unsolicited plug, this film is not yet rated as a great first half of a documentary before they start dumpster diving and doxing people.
Correct.
Moving on, the French data protection watchdog CNIL issued its first GDPR fine, citing Google, 50 million euros. The fine comes from the onboarding process when setting up a new Android phone. The regulatory body found the process lacks transparency as Google uses intentionally, quote, broad and obscure, end quote, language, and requires clicking through 5 to 6 links to find out how information is used to personalize ads. CNIL also found that Google broke GDPR data consent rules by not providing specific and unambiguous consent options and pre-ticking an agreement to its privacy policy. The fine stems from a May 2018 complaint from the nonprofit NOID or NOID.
You can't avoid the NOID.
I think it's NOIB. Actually,
oh,
well, you can't avoid the NOIB either.
Apparently
you can. You just call it NOID.
Well, because it stands for none of your business.
NOIB.
They're trying to be privacy oriented here. This is a precedent, though. This is definitely the first test of, okay, there's that vague language in the GDPR that says you've got to make this understandable to people. And a lot of folks have looked at this as hope for the future that terms of service could be made understandable to people instead of burying things in miles and miles of legal text. And the French data protection watchdog coming up on the side of the consumer saying, yeah, we know technically you followed the rules here, but it's not easy enough for people to see what their choices are. You can't bury it down in the menus. You can't pre-tick options. You got to make it a real choice.
Well, 50 million euros,
not that much of a fine, though. That's just a slap on the wrist.
When it's Google, of course, you say, well, Google doesn't care about 50 million euros. And no, that's true. Google can afford it, but it does help behavior change for smaller companies, for Google, that, you know, the entire industry, if you're going to get your hand slapped repeatedly, by, again, having these practices that are misleading consumers, as CNIL found. It does change the behavior over time.
Google may not care about 50 million, but they sure care about precedent for the GDPR.
They sure do.
A lot of these companies.
Hi, this is Janice Torres from Yo Quiero Dinero. From a local business to a global corporation, partnering with Bank of America gives your operation access to exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful, you'll make every move matter. Visit bankofamerica.com/bankingforbusiness to learn more. What would you like the power to do? Bank of America N.A. Copyright 2024.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Companies do as well, and they should.
South China Morning Post has an article about China's free trade zone on Hainan Island, south of Hong Kong. It's kind of right off the coast east of Vietnam. Tech startups there can get free rent, reduced taxes, easier visa policies for their workers. That island already has a tourist visa where you basically don't need a visa. You can visit that island for 30 days without a visa, even if you're coming from the US, UK, etc. As well as access to government-backed funding. Microsoft and Singapore's Temasek backs Alibaba and Tencent, so they have some interest in China, have both agreed to develop the island, and talks are underway with IBM and SAP to establish Asian regional headquarters there. Huobi Group, one of the world's biggest cryptocurrency exchanges, moved its operations center to the island's blockchain pilot zone earlier last year. The free trade zone was ordered in April 2018 and will be fully operational by 2020. Alibaba's Jack Ma compared Hainan to Hong Kong as a modern version of Hong Kong, a digital free trade port, though companies still have to register with the government. They still have to file documents with multiple government agencies. It's not as free as the free trade port might be. But I found this just an interesting concept that, you know, China has about a dozen of these free trade zones. I think Shanghai probably being one of the most famous. But making one on an island near Hong Kong as sort of an alternate Hong Kong, where they say, hey, bunch of rules aren't going to apply, we're going to make it easier to start up, is something to keep an eye on.
Sure. I mean, kind of seems like China trying to have their cake and eat it too. But look, if the way that you can spur economic development in your country is by openly allowing people to ignore your laws, God bless you.
Well, it's, you know, one country, two systems with them in Hong Kong. Now it could be one country, two and a half systems with Hainan. But like I said, they have other free trade zones like this where they say, hey, we'll make it easy for foreign companies to come in and operate here as long as they just operate here and not throughout the rest.
I think what Justin's saying between the lines is, and I think we all agree with this, is that season three of The Wire was the best, when Amsterdam was a fantastic idea, just a little bit outside of what's acceptable.
Yeah, and whoever's in charge of it better be careful if it's too successful.
Sure. WhatsApp's Vice President for Policy and Communications, Victoria Grand, announced that going forward, all users would be limited to forwarding messages to a maximum of 5 recipients. The move is an attempt to limit the spread of misinformation and rumors and is a global expansion of what the company rolled out in India in July. Previously, forwards could be sent to up to 20 recipients. This is, of course, coming from the fact that there were issues where, you know, rumors about somebody being, you know, having committed a heinous crime would spread virally on platforms like WhatsApp that would could often result in deaths in some cases.
Yeah, no, there were lynchings in India, and it was largely attributed to communications on WhatsApp, and WhatsApp stepped up there with full page ads in the papers and implementing these controls to try to reduce the effect. To me, and we've been covering this on DTNS, so if you've been listening to DTNS, you're familiar with what was going on in India already. To me, WhatsApp is doing a much better job than their parent company at dealing with these sort of issues, maybe because they have less light shine directly upon them in most parts of the world, but figuring out how to dissuade behaviors with universal rules rather than sort of pasting on a bunch of reviews and weird things like Facebook does.
I don't know. This seems to me like it's a solution to a problem that is not actually a solution. So the problem is that people are spreading misinformation and fake news. So if you can share some bogus article with 20 people and now you can only share it with 5, okay, it's going to make things spread less rapidly, but it doesn't change the inherent problem itself.
But they did it in it. This is why I like it. They did it in India and saw that it had an effect. So it does work.
They want to step on that electric moment when you need to do something now and you need to spread it now and we need to go and kill this guy right now. And that mob is going to get so big that law enforcement can't do anything with it. And if this is a slight crippling of a feature that can put just that little bit of a break on those moments, then I can understand why they're going to do it. Because look, the trend both in America and worldwide is putting more onus and responsibility on the platforms that are facilitating this. So I don't blame them for doing it.
And the bad actors, there were bad actors who just wanted clicks and would spread these messages massively like spam. And now they can't do that because they can only spread to 5 at a time.
Like, for example, if you were going to spread to 5 people at a time, that All's Well, a Night Attack album was available on iTunes.
That would be okay, but you'd only be able to send it to 5.
Wow.
Yeah.
Reverse the rule.
Not 20. Too much virality. Okay, this is a great story, guys. Back in Italy, a project involving Cremona, this is a city in Italy's Museo de Violino, violin museum, is attempting to record notes from each Stradivarius, that's a type of violin, in its collection to preserve it for future generations. After a certain age, these violins have an irreproducible tone, become too fragile to be played. So they have a shelf life. So 4 musicians will play sounds from 2 violins, a viola, and a cello for 8 hours a day, 6 days a week, for 1 month. They'll be recorded by 32 ultra-sensitive microphones and stored in the Stradivarius Sound Bank. Cremona's mayor, who is also president of the Stradivarius Foundation, so obviously a violin enthusiast, has ordered the streets around the museum to be closed and also asked the people of Cremona not to make noise during the day. Former DJ Leonardo Tedeschi had the idea for the project, and also thanks to KV87 for bringing this to our attention in our subreddit.
This is one of those times when the New York Times did a great job with their article. They start with a woman in a coffee shop in the area that's been asked to be quiet, accidentally breaking a glass. And they end the story with the fact that the folks recording this noticed that glass had been dropped in that coffee shop a couple blocks away.
Wow. Yeah, ultra-sensitive microphones, indeed.
Yeah, and this is a great use of digital technology for historical preservation. I mean, these violins are 500 years old in some points, in some parts, cannot be reproduced. Nobody can figure out what makes a Stradivarius different. And so there is no way to reproduce them after they become too fragile, and eventually they'll all be too fragile. But if you record it the way they're recording it, they not only be able to share that tone with people, but also be able to let people play it electronically by reproducing those sounds.
Man. Worth noting that there have been double-blind experiments in which people attempted to figure out whether or not there's truly something magical about a Stradivarius versus a currently made a viola or cello or whatever, and nobody's been able to reproduce any kind of, like, once you go double-blind, forget it, it's time. That's what they say. That's the old saying right there.
Well, what's interesting is it was a DJ who had the idea for the project, because that's what DJs do. They take, when you sample sounds, they actually do this with high-end synthesizers. you can get a Steinway piano and a Korg keyboard because you can buy and download the sample set and reproduce it, you know, and you map it to the keyboard. Essentially, this is what they want to do with the Stradivarius. But it's interesting that it took like a DJ to kind of kickstart it, even though the technology's been around for like more than a decade.
Yeah. So finally, we'll be able to get that 400-year-old Stradivarius loops on the new Migos.
Yeah, look for it on SoundCloud soon. Hey, folks, if you want to get all the tech headlines each day in about 5 minutes, be sure to subscribe to DailyTechHeadlines.com. Now, they didn't use 32 ultra-sensitive microphones. They didn't have to shut down traffic in Austin. But these two fine gentlemen joining us today have created... Is this your fifth comedy album? Is that right?
Fifth comedy album. This hopefully will be the third that debuts at number one on the Billboard comedy charts. And it is the first that includes, I think, either 50-50 or majority music.
Certainly the majority of everything that's good about this album was not created by Justin and I, right? Like, I think we can verify that. But this is... This feels more alchemy than science, right? Because the rules are a constantly shifting landscape. Somewhere is an institution, multiple institutions. Some are emerging, like the iTunes store or the Amazon charts, or let's say in the literary world, the Wall Street Journal top 10 or the New York Times bestseller list or whatever. Like everybody is trying to pledge and wave their hands and say, here lies legitimacy. But they don't want to say we're the kingmakers who are deciding this stuff. And so folks who are creatives like Justin Robert Young and myself are constantly left trying to figure out like, okay, so what matters? A lot of people buying it? Let's try figuring out a way to get a lot of people to buy it. And then they say, okay, well, from now on, now there you can't get away for 2 cents. You have to charge a bigger amount. It's like, great, okay. Let's work this out. What are we looking for here?
Yeah. So even though this isn't a how-to, tell us some of the things that you have done that seem to have worked.
Well, here is the first thing that now that we've seen that this has had, and just for the record, at least on day one, this has had far more traction than I think anything that we have done on iTunes at the very least has. We'll see how that translates going forward. But for All's Well, we kind of went back to a strategy. This is the first album that we've come out in a little while that would technically be considered a single album. It is under 50 minutes, so therefore it would not be considered a double album, which means that we could charge the lowest that Billboard will allow, which is $1.99. That is the bargain basement price. What we think, at least hours into understanding that we had a lot more traction than we thought we did, is part of the secret sauce is that now this is the first time that we've released something while streaming was the dominant way that people get music. And so $1.99 is a bit of a no-brainer price. If you want to support us, that you're like, all right, well, I'll buy it and then I'll just listen to it on Spotify.
So you get double support. You get double count from that because you had somebody who wanted to spend it to help you guys out, but then also is contributing streams that also count towards the ranking as well.
Yeah. If we say, hey, look, according to Billboard, it takes like anywhere between 7 and 20 streams to count as a full album download. You can cheat and get that for $1.99. So play, you know, pay your $1.99 tax and then listen to it wherever you want.
Now, somebody in the chat room has already pointed out, because folks love to point things out, that it's not $1.99 everywhere, but that's part of the problem in the agility of these stores. Explain a little bit about that.
Well, some of the stores, you have to post it officially, then alter the price to whatever the price you want it to be. Like there's a default price that has to be altered after the fact. Of them, as best we understand, you know, the big three are Google Play, Amazon, and iTunes. iTunes is the only of the three that will launch at exactly the price that you would say we would like to launch at this price. So meanwhile, we find ourselves in this weird lag between, you know, like hurry up, Amazon, we'd love for you to get the price right. Hurry up, Google Play, on and on we go. But an artifact of that is absent either of those other channels. There are people who say, okay, I hate iTunes, I hate Apple, I hate everything, but I'm excited for this moment. And if I have to do something, fine. I'm gonna give my $1.99 to this one platform. And as a result, not only like we've had multiple albums launch at number one on the comedy charts, I don't know, Justin, that we've ever gone this stratospheric in the general charts before.
No, yeah, no, we have never seen this kind of traction. And part of that is, you know, the fact that Google and Amazon don't make their money on music by and large. They have great music stores, but they both run off the same back end that you then have to get in touch with somebody at Google and Amazon who then have to take the deliberate step for them to not make as much money as they would if it were listed at $9.
Why can't you just list it at the price you want to list it at? Is it, they just don't give you that option?
No. They have to get it, and then they have to go and change it. And that's just again, it's because Amazon doesn't do a lot of music sales comparably to other stuff that they do. For Apple, music has, since the era of Steve Jobs, been sure. Very important. The iTunes store was very important in getting the Apple brand out to people who are Windows users and stuff like that. So they have built a very agile platform.
So here is strangely one of the benefits to the way everything has unfolded, because if, let's say, in an alternate universe, all three platforms had done exactly what we wanted and launched at $1.99, we might have a bit of a complication of, say, just telling everybody buy it. It's $1.99 everywhere. But by virtue of some people being good about launching at the intended price and others not, now we have a very simple story that has resulted in on exactly one platform is where everybody's diverting their efforts. And so now, you know, the fact that we hit number three out of all albums, full stop, on iTunes. And guess what? Here's the best part. Tomorrow, I'm not technically a wizard or a mentalist, but I'm going to guess that if Amazon were to finally get the price set right, then all of a sudden we would be handed a new narrative of like, finally, now you could buy it on the other place. Yeah. And we'll see a similar version of what we've already seen so far today.
And that's the biggest thing, is in a world where there's no monoculture and everything that you see is what you surround yourself with, then the idea of us charging into the void and upsetting the Apple cart on like the new future album,
we're Amazon or Google cart
future album, right? On iTunes. And we will, I mean, unfortunately, the way that CD Baby categorizes things, we just had to list ourselves as spoken word. That was the first thing, is CD Baby says, okay, well, what kind of genre are you? And it's country, rap, rock and roll.
Yeah. I mean, it's called CD Baby.
Yeah, it is.
A huge surprise they would be limited.
So we had to be spoken word. And then a subsection of that is comedy. So when Amazon gets it, and again, Amazon just gets this one gigantic big back-end feed that then they are using their own algorithms to sort out. We are not a comedy album on Amazon. We are a spoken word album.
Because they don't dig down a level?
Because just the way that the way that system works. And so we had the very, very, very weird sensation yesterday as we realized, we looked on where we were trending on the spoken word charts, and found out that we had displaced Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream speech on Martin King Day.
It's a complicated feeling.
Yeah.
Comedy category at that moment.
I really, really wish they would have been a little bit better about this. This is not, it's like, yay, no, boo, boo to us. I'm ashamed. I apologize.
Well, you know who I'm not going to apologize for? Everyone who participates in our subreddit. You can submit stories and vote on others. It's a lot of fun. DailyTechNewsShow.reddit.com. Get in there as soon as the show's over and see how, I don't know, meet a friend. If you also want to hang out on Facebook, you don't have to choose between the two. You can hang out in both places. Facebook.com/groups/DailyTechNewsShow is where to go.
And then send us an email at feedback@DailyTechNewsShow.com and Sarah will read it, like this one.
Perhaps, yes. Norm from the Central Valley in California had some thoughts on our discussion, which I missed because I wasn't on the show on Friday. And I'm bummed because it was with Nicole Lee about food tech. And Nicole has a lot of thoughts about that. It's a theme that we all enjoy. Norm says, while bringing up the Instant Pot, adding voice support may be a benefit to some people. I think the broader trend of technological melding with cooking is very interesting. I have a non-connected Instant Pot, and it took until this segment to realize I don't own a cookbook for it. I just use the internet to find recipes. I think Nicole brought up the June oven, but surprised there wasn't any mention of the biggest trend that I have noticed, the sous vide cookers. While the Instant Pots are trying to serve many masters, sous vide seems to be trying to give the amateur a professional tool. On a side note, I got one for Christmas, and I'm underwhelmed so far. I don't think that the sous vide really works with connectivity, as the circulator needs to consistently keep the temperature constant. And in a broader technological trend, I think there was something last year about blockchain helping track food to aid in tracking as well. Sounds like there's enough stuff happening with food to start up a DTNS Labs.
If only we still did DTNS Labs. Get us to that next milestone. Maybe we'll start it back up. Sous vide, actually been around for years. I mean, it's been around for a lot of years, but as a tech trend, I remember hearing about it at a dinner at CES, I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago. So yeah, definitely something that uses the app. Doesn't sound like Norm actually likes the connectivity of his, but
I reject Norm. I reject Norm. I had a sous vide cooked rare half a steak before I came on here today. And let me tell you what, having a Bluetooth connected sous vide machine that lets me know when I got to go take that thing right out at the exact second that it needs to be taken out and when it's heated up was a delight.
Did you feel it was perfectly cooked?
Yeah. I mean, certainly better than I would cook by myself.
Sure. Yeah. Steak for lunch. You're living a good life.
Loving it.
Thanks to Justin Robert Young and Brian Brushwood for being with us. What a treat. I can't remember the last time both of you were on DTNS together. Congratulations on climbing the charts of Billboard. Let folks know where they can keep up with all of your work.
You can please head on over to nightattack.tv/album. That's probably the easiest way, where you can go ahead and just click on that iTunes link and go there. If you're listening to this right now on Tuesday or Wednesday, then please go to iTunes. If that is to your taste, we would greatly appreciate you kind of keeping the heat on this album. We are really far up the charts, and time is of the essence. As soon as the Amazon and Google Play stores change their prices, we will be the first to let you know at Night Attack Show on Twitter.
Go get it, folks, and support us on Patreon. If you're not supporting us on Patreon, you're missing out. There's columns from Roger. There's audio commentaries from me that we give as perks to the patrons. And in fact, people who stay with our top tiers for 3 months right now get merchandise with Len Peralta's 5-year anniversary art on it, celebrating 5 years of Daily Tech News Show. Advisor level folks get a poster. Master level folks get a mug. You can find out all the details at patreon.com/DTNS/merch.
Our email address is feedback@dailytechnewsshow.com. We love your feedback. Please keep it coming. We're also live Monday through Friday. If you can join us, please do. 4:30 p.m. Eastern, 21:30 UTC. Find out more at dailytechnewsshow.com/live.
Back tomorrow with Scott Johnson. Talk to you then.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Hi, this is Janice Torres from Yo Quiero Dinero. If you own or operate a business, whether it's a local operation or a global corporation, partnering with Bank of America could be your smartest move. By teaming with Bank of America, you'll enjoy exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful, you'll make every move matter. Position your business to capitalize on opportunity in a moment's notice. Visit bankofamerica.com/bankingforbusiness to learn more. What would you like the power to do? Bank of America NA, copyright 2024.